their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Thanks for joining us again today. How's it going, Rick?
It's going fine. I think we've got a good episode for everyone.
I think so too. So what's our topic today?
Well,
I'm trying to read your notes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, me too. I think we'll have you do the notes next time. Better penmanship, probably. What we wanted to focus on was helping people who are new to photography. And so this episode can be used a couple ways. Potentially, someone who's new to photography could listen to it and get some good ideas about charting a course and how they learn about photography. But the way we're really intending this is for our listeners who are a bit more experienced. And we know most of our listeners tend to be intermediate, at least, photographers. Most of them are not beginners. So it's the idea of how do you help teach and mentor and coach and all those good words a new photographer?
Yeah, and that's a pretty good challenge, because a lot of times people come up to you because, you know, they see you've got this fancy camera or whatever. They go, mm-hmm. Wow, you know, I want to get better at this, but, you know, your photos look so much better, right? How do I make my pictures look like yours? And the first thing is, well, you got to move past your phone. You know, right? I mean, that's the thing. So we'll talk a little bit about approaches to getting started. Also, some ideas for gear, camera things, top level, you know, because it's an investment, right? So,
yeah.
So having those conversations and sort of what things you should talk to a potential, if you're going to be mentoring someone or just giving advice, you know, the kinds of things that you can put them on the right path to really enjoying photography.
And it's safe to say that both of us have done this many, many times. So I think we've developed a sense of what works and what doesn't work.
Absolutely.
What's helpful and what turns someone off.
Okay, so what's a good starting point then? You know, where you know someone comes up to you and you know you're going to help them with photography. Where can you start?
I think the most important thing is upfront to have a pretty honest discussion about what they're trying to get out of it. You know, what are their goals? What are their interests? You have to get some focus early on and also get a sense of whether or not someone really is going to stick with some of the learning that you really have to do in order to improve your photos.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's composition and creativity or it's technique or a variety of things. What's their willingness to invest and what do they want to get? What are images that they've seen that they want to be able to, at least at the very least, come up with similar quality photos?
Yeah, because a lot of times it's just, I want to get better pictures of my kids playing soccer.
Yeah.
I want to get
which
better.
Which is okay.
Yeah. I want to do family portraits that look nicer,
mm-hmm.
so that when I take pictures, they don't look like snapshots. And sometimes it's, no, I want to take pictures of wildlife or landscapes or travel or whatever it might be. But I think it's a great point, because otherwise it's overwhelming. Well, I just want to take pictures.
And for some people, quite honestly, the phone is the right answer.
Right.
It really is. And that's okay.
True.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. So you've had this conversation and they say, okay, let's go. And maybe one of the things you can do is go out shooting with them together. You know, they're going to come with whatever. And this is a good idea, because it doesn't have to be like, you know, sunrise somewhere or anything, but just you can go out with that person and see what equipment that they have to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're probably going to ask you later, and we'll discuss later about what they should buy. That's always part of this conversation. But see what they have and just take them and say, all right, let's just shoot. Today we're going to go to the farmer's market and we're going to take pictures. Or we're going to do a photo walk
mm-hmm.
downtown or wherever you might be and do that. So what's a good way to help them start off? So they got the camera, they come up to you and they go, okay, tell me what I should do. And it's very easy to get too far into the weeds, right?
Yeah. And we're going to come back to the camera and lens selection topic, because that can be something that people ask you first. But for me, what I almost always do, without exception, is have them put the camera on program mode, auto ISO, auto white balance, those kind of things as a starting point. A simple autofocus pattern, you know, could just be the central one, something that's very easy and straightforward. And the rationale is what I really want them doing initially is not worrying about that stuff, but starting with composition and some creativity and things like that. I think that's the best place to really put the emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on all the geeky, techie stuff. It's on the composition and the ideas.
And also looking for subjects.
Yeah.
And
lighting.
And learning to see light, looking for subjects, and, you know, let the camera figure out the exposure. Is it going to be perfect all the time? No, but you know what? They're awfully good.
Mm-hmm.
The mode that you just described, program auto exposure, auto ISO, auto white balance.
Matrix metering.
Yeah. And then, you know, so if there's one thing they ought to learn how to do, though, it's how to operate their autofocus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't get into the whole back button focus, you know, like that's, no, just.
You don't want to overwhelm them.
Let's just, so that you basically want them to use whatever camera that they might have as a point and shoot device. And that's okay for a beginner. You know, I've had people on workshops. I can remember sometimes I would have a couples of clients, you know, that my wife is coming along and she just, you know, isn't really a photographer, but she likes to take pictures. And sometimes her pictures were great because she wasn't burdened by having to think about it. She just had her camera in program mode and went out and took pictures, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I think it can be completely valid in that first shoot that you're talking about, where they just use their phone, if that's what they've been shooting with.
But just to look for subjects and approach them differently.
Yeah.
You know, so some
shoot
of the things.
Shoot from ground level.
Right.
Shoot details. Shoot expansive things.
Get close up.
Yeah.
And learn how to do that to get creative. Because I think the creativity is the part that it's hardest to teach. You know, you have to have that little bit of creative juices flowing in your own mind. To identify subjects, to then compose them in the frame, and just take pictures.
Yeah, and I'll just mention one thing that I've found. See if it correlates with your experience too. The people that I've worked with that really embraced the creativity part and the composition part, and that was really their interest as opposed to the techie stuff, are always the ones who got the best photos quickly. The people, and it's always guys, who come into it from a techie point of view and you know.
And no offense to people working in IT, but they work in IT.
Yeah, they do. They do. And they want to know the best sharpening settings and stuff right off the bat. They get the worst photos by far because they're not thinking about the creative ideas. They're just not. Their brain is swirling with, you know, algorithms and settings, and they miss the point.
Right. You can learn the settings later.
So if you know you're that kind of person, or that the person you're coaching is that kind of person, try to help them out of that mode. Just tell them, forget it for now. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Come back to that later.
It's just so, you know, because you'll miss shots. You'll miss things if you're worrying about settings. You really do. And this isn't to say that the settings aren't important. They get there eventually, but those are things that can be learned at a later time.
You need to build up a little bit of muscle memory on other things first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brain memory.
Yeah, neuron wiring.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking for subjects, trying to find things, looking for colors, looking for light and shadow. I think that's more important. And then working with them to identify light and also identify time of day to help them guide their subjects, to identify their subjects based on the light that you have.
Right.
So there's some subjects that work really great in full midday light, you know, like action shots where you need fast shutter speeds and you want it bright, a lot of wildlife. But then there's the times of day where it's just, you'll get better photos from being there at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, landscapes, which we both do a lot of, you know, it's the obvious, you know, right around the beginning of sunrise, you know, or even before sunrise. Before sunrise or after sunset can be wonderful because the contrast is reduced and the colors become more saturated and just mm-hmm. look more vibrant. Being there at that right time and identifying that. But understanding that, hey, if you shoot in the middle of the day, there's other things you can try. There's, you can go into a shady spot. You can shoot, right. You know, there's, you don't have to shoot. I give this presentation sometimes on light and there's all kinds of ways to describe light, but when I get down to it, photographers tend to describe light as a very binary function, right? Mm-hmm. It's either good or bad, right? We have good light or we have bad light, but what does that really mean?
Yeah, good light is a lot of different things.
Right, it depends on the subject. So good light can be anything depending on what your subject is. So if you learn how to identify subjects that work for the light that you have, I mean, overcast can be miserable for landscapes, but it's great for close-ups.
Absolutely. So the portraits.
Yeah, it's good for those kinds of things. So, you know, other things, what about, you know, how should they be setting up their camera? Not from a setting standpoint, but should they be shooting RAW? Should they be shooting JPEG? Because I know a lot of people say, oh gosh, I'm not ready for RAW. I can't deal with it.
And they probably aren't. It's probably another one of those things that just too much to worry about initially. But what I'll usually do is recommend they set up their camera in RAW plus JPEG.
Okay.
And that way, if they get some really good images and 6 months down the road, they're becoming an absolute fiend at RAW editing, they can go back to those images and get something more out of them. They have that safety net. But they don't have to do it at the start. They can just use the JPEGs, make it really simple.
Yeah, and you know, that's, JPEGs are universal currency. I like that idea of having the RAW as something that you can go to down the line when you get there. Because most cameras, I mean, let's face it, they produce a pretty darn good image right out of the mm-hmm. box, you know, just in JPEG mode.
Mm-hmm.
So then, as someone progresses, what are the next steps? So you know, you know, because the composition and the subject identification is huge. That's the critical part of photography. Mm-hmm. But then as you move through, we start talking about other kinds of settings. And what are those, you know, the one setting that I like to talk about next from an exposure standpoint, it tends to be depth of field, mm-hmm. aperture. Mm-hmm. Is that what you find, Rick?
Yeah. Although someone who is, you know, really focused on sports photography might be a little bit of a different answer, but most of the time it's depth of field and how the aperture affects that.
Yeah, because depth of field is a creative tool. And I think what sets DSLR photos, what people think as photographs, what sets those shots apart from something that you do with your phone is the reduced depth of field that you can get with a faster lens. And that faster lens could even be your kit lens, but you just shoot it wide open.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be, you know, everything is F22 kind of stuff. But understanding the relationship between the impacts of aperture on the exposure settings and what it does to your ISO and your shutter speed, you know, with your camera.
Mm-hmm.
But then looking at the creative effects of aperture on how the image looks. Because I think it's easy to talk about aperture in terms of f-stops and shutter speeds and, you know, exposure triangles. But what we're really trying to change with our aperture is depth of field.
Right.
So are you shooting a landscape, in which case depth of field is, you know, greater depth of field is important? Or are you shooting a portrait where shallower depth of field is important?
And attention to that depth of field is one of those things that can really set apart better photos from mediocre photos.
Absolutely. So another good thing.
And I think related to that also a little bit of a discussion about subject motion and shutter speeds and
right.
things like that, because there's a whole creative aspect there. Moving water and how it looks at different shutter speeds. whether or not you're going to be able to stop action at certain shutter speeds, and teaching them a little bit about that. The having fun with intentional blurring of motion.
Right.
Those can be things that you start introducing after a little while.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the and that fits in with the aperture. So, you know, that exposure triangle, which you have the components of aperture, shutter speed, and ISO. And those mean one thing in the context of getting the correct exposure. You know, you can combine those however you, whatever works. But the creative aspect of aperture is depth of field. The creative aspect of shutter speed is whether you're freezing motion or blurring motion. And the impact of ISO is, you know, noise or not. But yeah. You can leave that one. I wouldn't worry about that aspect of noise at all. You know, it's there, but it's not something I would dwell on with a beginner.
Right. And I think an important point that, you know, is that what we've discussed so far isn't something that you do in 2 or 3 days with someone. It's something that you spread out over, at the very least, weeks or months, you know, so that they're not trying to take on too much initially. And ideally, start doing some, joint reviews with them. Look through their images with them. Have them show you images that they particularly liked, and you talk about, well, why did that work? And helping them recognize those situations. Also, ones that they thought were going to be really good, yet when they looked at the images, it just didn't work for whatever reason. And it could be composition, or it could lead into, well, maybe it's time we talk a little bit about raw processing, because you've got blown out areas of your photo, but guess what? I can show you how to save those and make the photo still work. You know, it can lead into those new techniques, you know, through that joint review.
Yeah, and during the review, because I mean, I find that to be the best part of working with clients is seeing everybody's images. It's not just about showing off; it's about what image did you struggle with, and the tools that you can use. And this is where your image review on a computer helps, is because you can then steer them to learn about their EXIF data and their histogram. I mean, the histogram is another, you know, that would be another great step to show them when they're ready to learn about exposure. But just being able to pull up the shooting data and say, oh, this one was shot at 20th of a second. There's a reason why this is soft or blurry or whatever. How could we fix that next time? And then put it in those contexts.
Yeah. And then, you know, one thing I know is true for you too, is you have to, you know, based on your experience, you have to be really careful how you talk to people about their images. And by the way, if someone ever goes shooting with us and does an image critique session, you won't find us saying, oh, that's awful, that's terrible, you're a bad photographer. There are always aspects of photos that were good, a good idea. May not have gotten quite as far as it needed to, or some other things needed some help, but they're almost always nuggets of good ideas and images. So start with those. Help build up self-esteem and confidence.
Yeah, we don't subscribe to the Hell's Kitchen
approach of
critique. I had a client showed up on a workshop, and he asked me if I would be willing to look at a shot that he had captured, you know, not on the workshop. And I said, sure. And it was black and white photo. And he asked for some feedback on it. And the reason why he wanted the feedback, he says, well, I just came out of another workshop where I was doing this. And the instructor basically told me he never would have taken, why did you even take that picture? It was just crap. And
you
know, pardon my French, but you know, and I was just like, well, first of all, what kind of instructor wants you to be enthusiastic about photography if all they're going to do is beat you down?
Yeah.
You know, and are there things you could have done differently with the photo? Sure. But that's not constructive feedback.
No, a better way is to ask some questions. Well, what are your thoughts about the photo? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? Start getting them to talk, and more importantly, think about it. And then you can kind of gently introduce some things. Well, what about this? What if you had done this? How do you think that would have affected the shot? Do you think you might have liked it more? Oh, well, yeah, I think I might have. But you pull them into the problem solving.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, but that's the beautiful thing about our sessions, we can go back with digital. You can not only capture a lot of images, but when you review them, you can see what their settings were, and you can
do it quickly
and just very much. And then you can use that to reinforce. Well, okay, this is probably why this image came out the way that it did.
Yeah.
Now the elephant in the room, of course, is someone comes in and they'll say, well, what kind of camera should I get, or what should I buy? And this is a slippery slope. It's really can be tricky because, you know, if they're not really into it, or if they're not really sure they're into it, you don't want to make recommendations for $3,000 kits. You know, it's not smart.
No, no.
So what would you recommend to a beginner? I mean, obviously, assuming that they have that interest, mm-hmm. you know, to go beyond just, you know, snapshots with the phone.
Yeah. So one thing I would say is more often than not lately, meaning last year or so in particular, I've really been recommending mirrorless cameras much, much more.
Okay.
And it's for a couple of reasons. One, I think the ones that have electronic viewfinders, that's just a wonderful learning experience right there for exposure. It's so easy to see the effects of settings, whether it's aperture and seeing the depth of field easily in the viewfinder, not some dark image that you see when you try to stop it down in a DSLR. It's super easy to see. They can see exposure error very easily. Is the photo too dark, too light? What might it look like? You can even see things like black and white settings, effects, and different color ones. So it makes it an easier learning tool, I think.
The other thing is, a built-in pre-visualization tool. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
You don't have to wait and chimp. I think the other thing is, realistically, there's a lot of growth in those areas. So it's likely going to be a system that they can keep around for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, so budget comes into play, you know, because if you were just getting started in photography, as much as I like my Nikon Zs,
mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't recommend that
right.
for a beginner, unless they were really, no, I'm into this and I've done a lot of photography and this is my second camera, you know, that I'm buying. But there's some budget options, some of the Micro Four Thirds and APS-C systems from Fuji and from Olympus that won't completely destroy your bank. Another option, of course, is getting one of those entry-level bundles. You know, I see these at my local Costco all the time, you know, $499, $500, mm-hmm. which is not an insignificant amount of money, but that will often get you a body and a two-lens kit.
Yeah.
The only concern with those is that sometimes the lowest end model is really designed more as a point and shoot camera. And some of the later on functions that you want to learn, like changing apertures and stuff, might be a little more buried in the menus to do. I generally recommend something, if they're truly an enthusiast, sort of in the middle of the range, you know, enough room to grow, but the camera is, capable of doing things that are a little more sophisticated, even if you're not using them right away.
Yeah, and that's where that honest discussion that we talked about earlier really comes into play. You know, how serious are they really? You know, how much time are they really going to invest? Therefore, how much money makes sense to invest?
Absolutely. I mean, if they want to do family pictures and travel stuff, then you know what? The camera and the kit lenses are going to be more than enough.
Yeah.
If they suddenly say, you know, I really want to do better portraits. This is something that I really want.
Yeah.
And that's where you can say, well, now you might want to invest in a prime lens, a faster lens, or a macro lens. Or if it's sports, maybe they want to get one of those telephoto lenses that are faster, you know, dedicated for a particular area. But you would never want to advise someone to go out and get all of those things first. Well, you need your portrait lens and you need your macro lens. And no.
Yeah.
So keep it simple.
Yeah. One other thing, too, is I think it's important to be really careful about imposing your values and beliefs on someone else. You know, this is how I do it. It's the only way to do it. There is no other way. You must use these tools. You must shoot this way. Be really, really careful about that. You know, be more of a coach rather than a dictator.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's a huge point. And you know, it's great that darn near any camera that they have is going to work for 95% of subjects.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is more or less gone, but I'll just mention it just in case. For quite a while, after digital was around, there was a group of people insisting that everyone needed to learn with film photography first.
Oh, yes.
And I've never believed that, and I don't believe it today. I think digital is a wonderful way to learn because, like we were talking about, you can put your attention on the things that make more of a difference. And I don't personally see any value in starting off someone with a Pentax K1000 film camera and a 50 millimeter lens.
Right. Even though that's probably how a lot of us learned.
Yeah. But it's just, I think time has moved on.
Yeah. The biggest trends that I've seen is that when digital came on the scene, when it got popular, it was having that feedback after you shot to be able to correct mistakes. So being able to review an image instantly, look at the histogram, make exposure adjustments. Mm-hmm. And this loops back to what you're saying. The reason why, and the biggest area where I think mirrorless is making strides is that it now builds on that. You can make those exposure adjustments before you even take the image.
Yeah.
So that's why I would also think really strongly about having a mirrorless camera system.
Yeah.
But you know, talk to them. What is the subject they want? I mean, there are things that are great with some cameras, but maybe not as good with other cameras. You know, fast action, for example, might steer them in a different direction than otherwise.
Yeah, and I you know, just one other thing I'll mention is I was just thinking back on things that I did with my son when he was first learning, and he had a really early interest. He started shooting with an SLR when he was 8, which was pretty crazy. So he shot with film for a while, and then a little bit later on, digital really came out. I got him a D70, a Nikon D70, when that first came on the market. And he certainly learned plenty of things with film, including, you know, the stuff that we've talked about. So he understood apertures and shutter speeds, and quite honestly, he understood spot metering and all that stuff.
Wow.
Pretty quickly. But that was kind of up to him, and he did it at his pace. But when he got the D70, oh my gosh, I saw him really taking off. That's what really convinced me that digital was the way for learners to go as opposed to film.
And I think a lot of it is that there's that barrier of shooting a lot of images that we had with film, this idea that, oh my gosh, I've only got 36 or 12 exposures. That's good from the standpoint of you have to make every shot count.
Mm-hmm.
But in learning, sometimes you just have to feel that making mistakes is okay.
Yeah.
And with digital, you can make all the mistakes that you want.
And experiment like crazy.
Exactly.
Shoot a whole series of shots of the same thing at different apertures. What does it look like?
Exactly.
Shoot moving water at different shutter speeds. What does it look like? What do I like?
Right. And then, of course, the best piece of advice, right? I mean, clearly the shameless self-promotion is, you know, have your friends listen to our podcast.
Oh, right? Yeah. I forgot that.
Follow us on our Facebook page.
Post questions.
Ask questions on our Facebook page so we can answer them on the air. But no, I think this is really, really important stuff. So, if you've got a question for us specifically, do we have a pinned post on our Facebook page where you can ask questions in the comments, and that's facebook.com/imagedoctors. So be sure to check us out. And I don't think there's too much else to go into, but if you've got a question from this episode, we'll have, as always, we put a post dedicated to this episode. So if you've got specific questions you want to hear back from us on regarding our episode today, you know, we'll have that for you too. So,
yeah. And hopefully it gave you some good ideas on how to help people and think about your own family too.
Absolutely. And just go out there and shoot. So until next time, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And we will see you in a week.
Bye-bye.